Langdon stood rigid for several terrifying moments, trying to process what had just happened. Suddenly, in the distance, he heard an unexpected sound. It was coming from the rotunda. Someone was screaming. Chapter 10. Robert Langdon had entered the Capitol Rotunda many times in his life, but never at a full sprint. As he ran through the north entrance, he spotted a group of tourists clustered in the center of the room. A small boy was screaming and his parents were trying to console him. Others were crowding around, and several security guards were doing their best to restore order.
"He pulled it out of his sling," someone said frantically, "and just left it there."
As Langdon drew nearer, he got his first glimpse of what was causing all the commotion. Admittedly, the object on the Capitol floor was odd, but its presence hardly warranted screaming. The device on the floor was one Langdon had seen many times. The Harvard Art Department had dozens of these, life-sized plastic models used by sculptors and painters to help them render the human body's most complex feature, which surprisingly was not the human face, but rather the human hand. Someone left a mannequin hand in the rotunda? Mannequin hands, or handikins, as some called them, had articulated fingers, enabling an artist to pose the hand in whatever position he wanted, which for sophomore college students was often with the middle finger extended straight up in the air. This handikin, however, had been positioned with its index finger and thumb pointing up toward the ceiling. As Langdon drew nearer, though, he realized this handikin was unusual. Its plastic surface was not smooth like most. Instead, the surface was mottled and slightly wrinkled, and appeared almost like real skin. Langdon stopped abruptly. Now he saw the blood. My God. The severed wrist appeared to have been skewered onto a spiked wooden base so that it would stand up. A wave of nausea rushed over him. Langdon inched closer, unable to breathe, seeing now that the tips of the index finger and thumb had been decorated with tiny tattoos. The tattoos, however, were not what held Langdon's attention. His gaze moved instantly to the familiar golden ring on the fourth finger.
No.
Langdon recoiled. His world began to spin as he realized he was looking at the severed right hand of Peter Solomon. Chapter 11.
Why isn't Peter answering? Catherine Solomon wondered as she hung up her cell phone. Where is he?
For 3 years, Peter Solomon had always been the first to arrive for their weekly 7 p.m. Sunday night meetings. It was their private family ritual, a way to remain connected before the start of a new week, and for Peter to stay up to date on Catherine's work at the lab.
He's never late, she thought, and he always answers his phone.
To make matters worse, Catherine was still not sure what she was going to say to him when he did finally arrive.
How do I even begin to ask him about what I found out today?
Her footsteps clicked rhythmically down the cement corridor that ran like a spine through the SMSC. Known as the street, the corridor connected the building's 5 massive storage pods. 40 feet overhead, a circulatory system of orange ductwork throbbed with the heartbeat of the building, the pulsing sounds of thousands of cubic feet of filtered air being circulated. Normally, during her nearly quarter-mile walk to her lab, Catherine felt calmed by the breathing sounds of the building. Tonight, however, the pulsing had her on edge. What she had learned about her brother today would have troubled anyone, and yet because Peter was the only family she had in the world, Catherine felt especially disturbed to think he might be keeping secrets from her. As far as she knew, he had kept a secret from her only once, a wonderful secret that was hidden at the end of this very hallway. 3 years ago, her brother had walked Catherine down this corridor, introducing her to the SMSC by proudly showing off some of the building's more unusual items. The Mars meteorite, ALH-84001, the handwritten pictographic diary of Sitting Bull, a collection of wax-sealed ball jars containing original specimens collected by Charles Darwin. At one point, they walked past a heavy door with a small window. Catherine caught a glimpse of what lay beyond and gasped.
What in the world is that?
Her brother chuckled and kept walking. Pod 3, it's called Wet Pod. Pretty unusual sight, isn't it?
Terrifying is more like it.
Catherine hurried after him. This building was like another planet.
What I really want to show you is in Pod 5, her brother said, guiding her down the seemingly endless corridor. It's our newest addition. It was built to house artifacts from the basement of the National Museum of Natural History. That collection is scheduled for relocation here in about 5 years, which means Pod 5 is sitting empty at the moment. Catherine glanced over.
Empty? So why are we looking at it?
Her brother's gray eyes flashed a familiar mischief. It occurred to me that because nobody is using the space, maybe you could use it.
Me?
Sure. I thought maybe you could use a dedicated lab space, a facility where you can actually perform some of the theoretical experiments you've been developing for all these years. Catherine stared at her brother in shock.
But, Peter, those experiments are theoretical. To actually perform them would be almost impossible.
Nothing is impossible, Catherine, and this building is perfect for you. The SMSC is not just a warehouse of treasures. It's one of the world's most advanced scientific research facilities. We're constantly taking pieces from the collection and examining them with the best quantitative technologies money can buy. All the equipment you could possibly need would be here at your disposal.
Peter, the technologies required to run these experiments are already in place.
He smiled broadly. The lab is done. Catherine stopped short. Her brother pointed down the long corridor.
We're going to see it now.
Catherine could barely speak.
You built me a lab?
It's my job. The Smithsonian was established to advance scientific knowledge. As secretary, I must take that charge seriously. I believe the experiments you've proposed have the potential to push the boundaries of science into uncharted territory. Peter stopped and looked her squarely in the eyes.
Whether or not you were my sister, I would feel obliged to support this research. Your ideas are brilliant. The world deserves to see where they lead. Peter, I can't possibly...
Okay, relax. It was my own money, and nobody's using Pod 5 right now.
When you're done with your experiments, you'll move out. Besides, Pod 5 has some unique properties that will be perfect for your work.
Catherine could not imagine what a massive empty pod might offer that would serve her research, but she sensed she was about to find out. They had just reached a steel door with boldly stenciled letters. Pod 5. Her brother inserted his keycard into a slot, and an electronic keypad lit up. He raised his finger to type his access code, but paused, arching his eyebrows in the same mischievous way he always had as a boy.
You sure you're ready?
She nodded.
My brother, always the showman.
Stand back. Peter hit the keys. The steel door hissed loudly open. Beyond the threshold was only inky blackness, a yawning void. A hollow moan seemed to echo out of the depths. Catherine felt a cold blast of air emanating from within. It was like staring.